now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Thanks again to Reno for jumping in the Battleborn Hour as we head into the final stretch, our last hour here. Cofield and Company with Willie Ramirez and Jeff Parles. James running the show, and just came down. You have something as we welcome Jesse Merrick in. Read this real quick, Jeff.
Yeah, just
read it. Let's
Go podcast, Max Crosby with Jim Gray, of course. On the firing Pete Carroll, haven't had time to really process it, to be honest. Just found out. I'm here at the building and literally see it pop up on the TV, so it is kind of gloomy, I would say. It's something that I've been a part of before, but just to speak on Pete, the season didn't go the way we all expected it. From the players to the coaches, I don't think anyone expected we would be in the position we are in getting the number one pick, to be honest. And then just more praising Pete. Ended the quote with big shout out to Coach Pete. We'll see what happens next. So there
and
you go.
With that, Jesse Merrick. What's happening?
Hey, what's up? So, not much. It's been a busy day.
We all expected it. You and I, everybody basically, every turn that we made yesterday was like, well, when's it going to go down? What time is it going down? We know what's going to happen. Is it going to be when we're driving home? Is it going to be right after the game? Is he going to come out and pull a Jack Del Rio and announce, hey, I've just been fired? When's it going to take place? I actually said today, I was at the gym 6 in the morning doing my warm-up. I see Stefanski fired, pointed it out to my friend, and I said, see that name? His name's going to pop up as the number one candidate in about 5 hours because the same thing's going to happen here. Hammer drops, you were at the facility. Fill us in.
Yeah, I mean, look, like you said, Willie, the writing was on the wall with all of this, you know. Just a failed experiment, let's be completely honest. Pete 74, he was brought in to lay a foundation, and they took a big step back in terms of the on-the-field product, which is hard to say with how bad things were last year. So look, given his age and where things are at, and them having the number one overall pick and over $100 million in cap space, like, they're now in a position where they can attract a coach like a Ben Johnson last year. Obviously, Ben didn't want any part of this. Now they've got an opportunity to be able to attract a coach with that top pick to be able to bring in his quarterback of choice and all of that cap space to be able to build around it. So I think this was one of those deals where it's the right time for the Raiders to make this move and hit the reset button again, even though they've been doing this whole wash, rinse, and repeat of hiring and firing coaches for so long. I think this is that turning point where now they make that move, and whoever the next coach is, they have to give him some time to really build it. At the very least, I'd expect like a 6-year deal or something like that.
Well, Jesse, this is a pretty good offseason to be needing a coach. Now, granted, it's not the greatest of field of coaches out there, but look at the other jobs the Raiders are competing with. There's no overwhelming, hey, this is the best job out there. And you just outlined it well. Like, you have the first pick. You have a ton of cap space. You're pretty much starting from scratch here. And whoever that next head coach is, like you said, should probably get a long deal and some patience here.
Yeah, 100%. And like you said, you look around the landscape of coaches and of jobs that are open, and I think the Raiders really is the most attractive, again, for the top pick, for the amount of cap space they have to work with, and probably an owner that's tired of losing and wants to just finally hit that reset button and be like, hey, let's build a real foundation. You have a GM in John Spitek who today said they have a mountain to climb, but they're not looking to climb it in one day. I think that is a massive thing to throw out there and say, because so many coaches have come in here and tried to do the whole, we're going to rebuild, but also win now. Like, that doesn't quite work. So they're all in on a full reset and a full rebuild. And I think that's huge. And that, again, is where a coach can come in and say, all right, I'm really going to kind of create this roster and shape it into my own mold. And also, too, like, let's be real about this team. Like, there are some talented pieces, but there is a lot of work to be done. Having said all of that, though, if you turn over this offensive line and figure out a way to get this offensive line even to, like, league average, even this season, that probably buys you a couple more wins, you know? So if they're able to do that, that's a massive jump forward for this team. And I think we've seen teams over the years be able to change around their offensive line fairly quickly. So that is, obviously, number one, get your quarterback. Number two, fix the offensive line. And then kind of build everything else out around there. And that's where you can really start to see some change for the Raiders.
Well, one of the questions, obviously, has been since about a few weeks ago when Max Crosby left the building was whether or not this is it. Have we seen the last of Max Crosby in a Raider uniform? We know how he feels about the community and the organization. We know how he feels about, you know, raising his his family here. Him and his wife have a little girl. So the fact of the matter is, when Pete talked to the media, he sort of danced around and said, hey, we talked. No, I don't blame him for leaving. Da-da-da-da. Just didn't tell us exactly what fueled it and if it left on bad terms. And I thought SpyTech basically said the exact same thing. It just wasn't verbatim. Dancing around whoever asked the question and gave the media a non-answer answer and said the exact same thing. Hey, I talked to Pete the last couple of weeks. I've really gotten to know him. He's a competitor. I don't blame him for being mad. You still didn't answer the question. Is he tradable or not? Is he leaving or not? What is he doing? So
And I think Raiders. Go ahead, Willie.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Raiders fans and all of us in the media would have liked a much more firm answer. But, you know, I get why he did it, leaving things a bit open-ended. But he did say that he believes Max embodies what it is to be a Raider, and he still thinks that. So reading between the lines there, it tells me he doesn't want to get rid of him. I think he just realizes he probably has some work to do, you know, to mend that relationship. And, like, let's keep it real. Max is probably going to be watching this because, again, he's gone through so many head coaches in his time with the Raiders. If he doesn't like the hire and doesn't like the direction and think that there's a very real path to turning this around, I could see him asking for a trade. He loves this organization, like you said, loves being here in Vegas. He is Mr. Raider. He literally has it tatted on him. And I personally don't think you trade Max Crosby, even if he asks for one. But you better believe he's watching this to see, okay, hey, are they making a move that I can really get behind? If not, things are going to change, and I could see Max asking to be moved. But I think that they're going to really probably talk with him a bit, too, and make sure that they're all on the same page with this in terms of being able to create that rebuild the right way. So Max is going to be keeping a close eye on who ends up being the head coach for this team going forward. And if that's someone he can get behind, I think we'll see Max Crosby back with his team.
Yeah, and if he does go, I want to see which team is looking to rebuild their defensive line, and if they got the if they have the salaries, if they have the cap space. Imagine the bookends of Myles Garrett and Max Crosby on the same defensive line. Holy smokes. All right, who's at the top? We're talking to Jesse Merrick, Silver and Black Sports Network. Jess, who's at the top of your list to replace Pete Carroll?
Yeah, so look, there's a bunch of defensive coaches who are actually really good out there. You know, some solid names. You go and look, and we hear Brian Flores and all that stuff. We hear, you know, about Jesse Minter from the Chargers. Robert Saleh, also an interesting name. I personally don't think they should go the defensive route. And in particular, I'm not buying all the smoke about Brian Flores and Brian Daboll simply because, like, the whole situation with Tom Brady and going to Miami and all that. Like, wasn't it him going to Miami to take Sean Payton with him to take Brian Flores' job? Like, if that's the case, you think Flores is going to be like, ah, no, we're good. You know, no worries about it, man. Like, I just don't see that really happening. So, for me, I think you lean offensive. And two guys to keep an eye on are Clint Kubiak and Cliff Kingsbury. Now, with Clint Kubiak, we've seen what he was able to do up there in Seattle this season. Sam Darnold is fifth in the league in passing. I think we would all agree that Sam Darnold is not a top five or even top 10 quarterback. He's helped turn him into that and helped continue what Kevin O'Connell built there. They're also scoring 28 points per game. That's pretty dang good. The Raiders would love something like that. Also, with Cliff Kingsbury, I know they tried to bring him in to be the offensive coordinator a couple years ago with AP, and the sticking point was they wanted him, I believe, on a two-year deal. He wanted a third year on that. They wouldn't budge on it. He wasn't very happy with how that handled, wasn't happy with the organization. But if they can mend that fence, even though he's a retread, I think it's very interesting because look at what he's done with young quarterbacks, okay? Offensive Rookie of the Year seasons for Jaden Daniels and also Kyler Murray. Oh, and he also worked with Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech. Who better to groom a quarterback? You know, so I think those are two guys from an offense perspective that the Raiders should really look at as being possibilities for them going forward.
Jesse, I'm going to throw another retread at you, and very polarizing name who probably is going to be around here. What about Mike McCarthy?
Yeah, God, that's one that like I have tried to avoid just because you know it's a very polarizing name, and I don't know if I'd go back to that well. But look, this is a guy that has been around the league for a long time and somehow, some way, always seems to find his way into the discussion and ends up getting jobs. You know, so it's very few guys you're going to be able to find that has a resume that he has. You know, obviously, he's got a Lombardi, you know, to his name. That was 15 years ago, but guys can make a name and a living off of that. Personally, I don't like that move. I don't think it's the way to go. Yes, he does bring in, you know, he's an offensive type of CEO type of coach, but it's that old school West Coast style. I don't think that's necessarily the move. You got to bring in somebody that's going to be a little bit more, you know, of today's game and a little more innovative. And I just think that he's not the guy to do that. And that would be one that I think Raiders fans would probably be ready to jump off a bridge if they hear that name called. So I don't know if he even gets interviewed. I'll be completely honest. I'd be surprised if that's something that ends up happening there.
Speaking with Jesse Merrick, Silver and Black Sports Network, joining us here on Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Black Monday, Pete Carroll out the door. So Tom Brady obviously has his fingerprints on this, is going to be involved. My question to you, you were here when Josh McDaniels was here. If Brady starts turning toward Patriots personnel, can Mark Davis afford to let him attempt at turning this into Patriots West again? Is it safe with Brady guiding the way, and was it just Josh McDaniels and his ego and being a control freak, or was it that that particular model doesn't fit in that building?
Yeah, I don't think it's that that model doesn't fit. I think it honestly was more of a Josh McDaniels type of thing, and even though he and Dave Ziegler came in and were on the same page at first, they very clearly weren't as time went on. You know, so I don't think it's necessarily the Patriot way that's the problem. We've seen guys have success from that vein. And again, I think Brian Flores is a heck of a coach, man. Like, if you can get him, that's a solid hire. Again, I just think personality-wise, with a young quarterback, all that stuff, I don't love it from that regard. But, man, like, that dude has turned around defenses everywhere that he's been. So if you go that route and try and recreate it with a guy like him, I think it can definitely work. It's, again, just like, okay, how is the team going to respond to that hard-nosed Bill Belichick type of thing? Again, like I said, though, if it's my decision, I'd go a different way. Don't let him recreate that. But Mark Davis said it in the statement. He and John Spytek are going to be the tip of the spear in this one. And Brady obviously has a very loud voice and is coming from a place of power in this one. So I think if he wants to go that route, as long as Spytek is on the same page as Brady, I think they would go that route and Mark Davis would let it happen. He just wants to win. And if they think that's the best course of action for this team, I could see him signing off on it.
Well, Jesse, isn't that kind of the whole ball of wax here of who's in charge? Like, I know in theory it's, hey, this is going to be Spytek's search, but how much is Brady going to play a role here? How much is Mark going to play a role in this? Heck, how much of a role is Jim Gray going to pop up here? Like, this is really like, that's the whole ball of wax here. This is the first step of becoming a competent organization of making sure that the pecking order, everyone understands it and they come to the correct decision, because even more so than what happens in April, getting this coach hire is going to be the bigger part of even getting April right in the first place.
Yeah, their decision on the coach is going to dictate the next 5 to 10 years of this franchise, like no matter what happens in the draft. Let's keep it real about that. And yeah, I think there needs to be a clear direction. And I think with the statement that Mark Davis released today after the firing of Pete Carroll, he said, okay, Spytek and Brady. And then when we did talk to Spytek today, he said the buck stops here. And so to me, that reads as Spytek is the final decision maker and Brady weighs heavy on a lot of these decisions and they talk about a lot of things. Spytek noted that they talk a lot. He wouldn't dive into specifics of just how much, but he said every major decision he talks to Brady on. But the thing that I gathered is that at the end of the day, Spytek, even though he's a young GM, is going to be able to make the decision on this one. And I think that's the way that it should be. You know, if he's the GM, let him pick the coach and he and the coach can work together to move forward. Let Brady work in more of an advisory role, especially if he's going to continue to be working for Fox and doing all that stuff. If Brady's here full time in Vegas and is at the facility each and every single day, that's a totally different story. I think he should be that guy making those decisions. But as long as he's splitting time and involved in so many other things, let the football guys that are in the building there every single day make those decisions. And that is, I think, how it will ultimately be going forward. Again, I just think Brady, and rightfully so, is going to play a large role in this process.
Silver and Black Sports Network is where you can find him. Jesse Merrick does a great job. The best information, so make sure you follow him. Jess, we appreciate you joining on. We'll talk to you next week for an update. Who knows? We may have a coach by then.
Yeah, hey, who knows? This could move quick, fast, and hurry, as Q likes to say. So we'll see how it all goes. But I appreciate you guys for having me on, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Listen, just got a text. Kalua said, hike soon.
Yes, we got to make it happen.
All right, talk to you later.
Later.
All right, so there you have it. Hey, FCS Championship, mm-hmm. Montana State up 7-0. They were laying a big number to another surprise team that's in the championship. Nobody expected Illinois State. Have you been following the FCS?
Illinois State didn't even have a seed number next
to them. They didn't even have a seed number.
And their upset of North Dakota State earlier this year is one of the biggest upsets of the
of all college football
of all college football history. I mean, and Rittenhouse threw five picks in that game, and they still won that game in Fargo.
So
crazy.
7-0 is the score, Montana State. And I'll tell you what, being down 7 against that offense is impressive. And they've been playing methodical football. So if you haven't tuned in, if you haven't watched this, it's on ESPN. Check out the FCS National Championship. Montana State going in. It's the second quarter's just starting. Illinois State with the ball. Really good football the FCS playoffs have been. When we come back, we are going to touch upon, well, there's some professional ladies that got into action today. Before we talk to Steve Kim, we're going to talk about some WNBA players that tipped off their new season when we come back on Cofield & Company.
It's Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Yeah, well, when a coach comes in and wants to hire his own staff, boy, he's going to put the gauntlet down, Jeff. You're going to make your demands, and this is the way it's going to be, and I want it done my way. And you know what? Today is National Screenwriters Day.
Oh?
And I don't think that you could write a screenplay like the one that's playing out in LSU, in Baton Rouge. Because Lane Kiffin, with the drama he's already caused or caught, you know, with Ole Miss, as he starts to build out his program at LSU, Charlie Weiss Jr. is the only staffer he's confirmed to remain with Ole Miss through at least the Rebels' semifinals game against Miami. Ole Miss could be shorthanded. Now, we touched upon this with Cofield a little bit. We're going to touch upon it with Steve Kim, get his thoughts. But this is just like Lane Kiffin. We were talking off the air to say, you know what? You want to join me? You need to do it this week. Tell Ole Miss you got to go. Right before they got their big game. Yeah. Can't you just see? I mean, what is this guy's deal?
Well, you could also say, what a script for Ole Miss.
Oh, like that's a screenplay.
Like if you, if
that's Ole Miss, when's that 30 for 30?
If Ole Miss wins the title, where, again, the only other circumstance we've ever seen this in college athletics was 1989 Michigan basketball. Mm. Where Bill Frieda takes the Arizona State job. Of course, we have the Bo Schembechler line, a Michigan man is going to coach Michigan, and Steve Fisher got the job and took that team to the title. And again, they got a very fortunate call against Seton Hall, but that's a different discussion for a different time. Yeah. But this is, I mean, first off, for Lane, like, it would be so poetic if Ole Miss wins the title and then Kiffin never sniffs a title at LSU. It would be poetic. It would be absolutely poetic, Willie, because I understand LSU is one of the premier jobs in the country, but you don't miss on the doorstep. You don't miss on the doorstep. Like, you were, like, you have the quarterback, you have the team, you're with a dude making his third career game as a head coach. They are in the semifinals. Like, Pete Golding, first two games as a head coach here in the college football playoff. So, yeah, look, I think you're right. I think Lane is probably a guy like that who would have said, hey, you got to come now or you're not coming at all. And there you go.
It's Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
U-N-L-V. U-N-L-V. Go fight, win. Hey. The Running Rebels back in action tomorrow. Cofield's up there in Laramie against Wyoming. But we got a lot more to cover here. And our guy, Steve Kim, we told you he'd be on. We told you he'd make it our Monday regular. Steve, what's happening? Did you get everything handled?
Yeah, Mario came a little bit late. We had a lot to talk about on the three knockdown rule. Kind of did our kind of a look back at 2025 in the year of boxing and a little bit of a preview for the shows in the can for tomorrow.
I can't remember what event he was just at. I think he was at the most recent UFC. He was here for something. I can't remember, and I was going to I was busy doing something. I was going to go up and say something, you know, just obviously and mention you, but I didn't. But anyway, glad you got it done. I'm glad you're able to join us. I'm glad we're able to talk about your Miami Hurricanes. They pulled off two big wins. Can they make it three in a row?
Well, they are the favorite for the first time this postseason. You know, it's interesting, when I was watching that game the next night, the Sugar Bowl, I kept thinking, I think Georgia, and it's like that old boxing adage, styles make fights. I think Georgia would have been a formidable opponent. Obviously, they're still Georgia, but I think an easier matchup than Ole Miss, believe it or not. Ole Miss has an up-tempo offense, and they have a quarterback that is a playmaking demon. There has to become a time when the Miami offense helps carry the load a little bit. You're asking this defense basically to almost, I don't say pitch shutouts,
right,
but to continually hold teams to under 14 points. There's going to come a point in time you're going to have to score some points here and lighten the load. And Ole Miss might be that opportunity, because they have a few good defenders like Suntering Perkins and Eccles, but I would think that Miami this game, it would be a good idea to try to at least get up to 28 points, given the firepower of Ole Miss.
Yeah, and I think that this is, like you said, this is the right spot to let the offense loose. And I think the one thing that's on their side is they haven't really been, because they've been defensively sound in the first two games, and they haven't been playing an opponent that allows them to get in that type of situation, that they really haven't been seen. Like, I think Ole Miss is on the table. You know what you're getting. I don't think that Ole Miss has a true scout. I mean, they could go back and look at all the game film from the entire season, but I think if Cristobal is going to pull something out of their hat, this is the time to do it.
Yeah, and to be fair, you know, I've been at both playoff games. The A&M game at Kyle Field, there was a swirling wind, which made, you know, a lot of your throw game kind of incompatible to the style of play that you needed. You just were not going to throw vertically. And so, and obviously that was a very tight game, 10-3. You know, I thought the offense was pretty serviceable given the circumstances, guys. I mean, that Ohio State defense is basically NFL across the board. They have at least two or three guys up front, McDonald and Curry, that'll play at the next level. Their two linebackers, Arvell Reese and Sonny Styles, they will get drafted very high. Caleb Downs, their safety, is probably going to be a top 10 pick. One of the cornerbacks, number one, he's a very highly, he has a future in the league. And one thing that was noticeable that game, when there was space or there was a window, that window closed very quickly. And that was the type of game that Carson Beck had to manage. And the one thing that you cannot do in a game like that, before you win a game, you can't lose a game. And I thought Carson, despite the relatively modest numbers, he only threw for 138 yards, okay? But he picked up a couple of first downs with his legs, and I thought this was a key stat. Miami was actually 7-for-14 on third downs, while Ohio State was well under 50. So those little things, along with the pick six early on from Keontae Scott in what is going to be a very tight game, those things really have a huge impact on a game where you do not have a lot of possessions.
Well, and Steve, you just hit it right there, where after the Fletcher fumble, Miami was clean the whole game. And look, and Ole Miss's defense is not on the same level as Ohio State's defense. And here you go. I heard what you said earlier, maybe Georgia was a better matchup, even though they might be the better team. I think if Beck plays clean football, this is a game Miami's got to get.
Yeah, look, at this point now, you can't be just happy to be here. And the reality is you're going to play a good team regardless at this stage. You know, one thing that I noticed as I rewatched the game back home, and I know a lot of Ohio State fans are wondering the same thing. I was wondering, and I'm very thankful that Ryan Day did not play more up-tempo. When he went up-tempo and they went no huddle and they went to the quick throw game, that is one way you neutralize the effectiveness of guys like Reuben Bain and Akeem Mesidor. You tire them out, you make fatigue a part of the game, and you get the ball out quickly. But for some reason, Ryan Day decided to play at a slower pace. So what happens is when you have one pick six, that has an outsized influence on a game. When you kind of know neither team's going to score more than 24 to 28 points, those plays are absolutely crippling. I expect this to be a little bit more high scoring, and I expect Trinidad Chamblay, as I like to call him, to be a key factor. This guy's been a little dynamo. He has absolutely been one of the Cinderella stories this year. And the stuff he did against Georgia, that's where I kept thinking, man, does Miami really want to play that guy?
All right. Well, you know what? Because you mentioned Chambliss at the end there, Steve. Is this Ole Miss team better off without Lane Kiffin now?
That's tough to say. I mean, look, you still have the same offensive coordinator. You have to give Lane Kiffin credit. He is the one who put this squad together. But you also have to give Pete Golding a lot of credit. I think he's done an unbelievable job of holding this together. The players have rallied around the whole cause. And, you know, now you're hearing stories of which coaches are just going to stay at LSU and which ones are actually – this is exactly why – it was so unrealistic for people to think that somehow Lane Kiffin should have been allowed to coach this team. You're either pregnant or you're not. You can't have two jobs at once in this level of football. I don't think it's realistic. Are they better without Lane? You know, I don't want to say that. I think it's unfair to say that because the bottom line is Lane led them to a one-loss season, and that one loss was to Georgia in Athens where they actually had a 9-point lead going into the fourth. Mm-hmm. So, you got to give Lane credit. It's 4 out of his 6 years in Oxford, they won double-digit games. He's turned into a really good college football coach. But, again, this whole situation and the way it was handled has stained him once again.
Well, not only that, I mean, you just hit on it there. I mean, the only offensive assistant we know is going to be there for Ole Miss in Glendale in 3 days is Charlie Weiss Jr. And that's also another like part of this, and I'm 100% with you on the Golding fact, where Pete Golding has basically held this coaching staff together with tape, and here you go with Ole Miss, and again, if they pull this thing off, Steve, it is the most impressive college related run that I can remember going with the NCAA tournament or baseball or whatever, by far, where you lose your coach. And football coaching, to me, means more than any other sport, and especially at the collegiate level.
Yeah, and, you know, when they made the agreement, and I don't know if we'll ever get the full story until years from now when someone writes a book and they'll do documentaries on this whole situation with Lane Kiffin and this kind of this awkward divorce. I wonder if Lane allowed these coaches to do what they did last week in preparation for that particular quarterfinal game. In his own mind, I wonder if he thought, well, they're not going to win anyway. So my coaches will be back by the first week of January, right? Like, think about it. It's easy to be gracious and magnanimous knowing that, hey, they're going to lose the next game, and then we can all get on with our lives. I wonder if there's a part of Lane going, oh, my God, I had no idea we were good enough to actually, like, go home and finish all four quarters, and now they got to face Miami. I actually think, to me, this is why universities or programs in the future have to draw a hard line that if you're going to leave us, this goes for everybody, not just the head coach. If you're going to leave us now, okay? But if you aren't going to take a job, immediately, you have to finish the job with us. As I said, you can't be half pregnant in life.
Steve, going to the other semifinal, Indiana and Oregon. We saw this game back in October. Indiana went up to Odson, won the game outright as an underdog, and that one, of course, the shoes on the other foot this time with the Hoosiers looking to be the first ever 16-0 college team. Boy, that statement just sounds ridiculous in theory of that it would be the Hoosiers of all teams to pull that off.
It does, and, you know, I was surprised that so many people actually thought Alabama was going to win that game last week. I'm a believer in Indiana, and if you talk to people that follow the NFL draft and scout, they'll tell you Indiana has a lot of guys that are going to play the next level. Yes, they're older. Yes, a lot of them were transfer portal guys, but you know what? That's the game now. That is the system in which you build rosters. It's not 1995. Alabama, because of the perception of them being an SEC program that's won a lot of national titles this century, if you actually examine them, they're okay. But they're a far cry from the teams that we saw 5-6 years ago. While Kurt Cignetti is showing that he is an absolute wizard when it comes to constructing a team, and that team is very, very sound. And I remember watching the Oregon game that you referenced back. That's about 7-8 weeks ago in Autzen. The most impressive thing about that game was, guys, you take away that pick six that Fernando Mendoza threw in the, I think, the third quarter. Oregon was clearly outplayed on their home field.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't even think the score reflected how much control Indiana had.
Yep.
So I don't know what changes unless Indiana just lays an egg and turns the ball over, because that can always swing a game. But I clearly expect Indiana to beat Oregon for a second time.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And I'm actually picking your Hurricanes. I'm picking Indiana. I think both defenses come up with the right plays at the right time. I think Indiana is going to do what they did in the first game, and I think Oregon's going to have their hands full. I do think Ole Miss is going to, you know, is going to be able to move the ball because of that, what that offense has done. But as we said to start, I think this is a chance for Miami to flex in areas it hasn't yet. And when it comes time to pick up the big stop, Miami's going to continue to shock people. I got Miami and Indiana in the national championship. Let's move to pro football, Steve, because it's Black Monday, 4 firings. There's now 6 openings. We'll start here in Vegas. Pete Carroll, gone.
Not surprised. And look, I'll admit it. I thought when they first hired him about a year ago, I thought he'd bring stability and make this at least a respectable team, if not a winning one. I never did I think that he'd have this type of year, just given his track record. But that team was a dumpster fire. And I think Mark Davis has to come to the realization that whatever's going on in that organization is not working. And they were bad. They really were probably the worst team in football, and maybe by a good amount. And there used to be a time where you'd give a coach at least 3, if not 4 to 5 years. I think those days kind of seems to be the pattern. And when it's all said and done, I do think the Raiders did make the right move.
Tom Brady's obviously going to have his fingerprints on this. When you think with immediacy of who's out there, is there anyone that pops in your head like this is the guy they have to go after first?
Well, I mean, there is the association with Brian Flores, who's rehabilitated himself after a very strong run as a defensive coordinator. You know, they both came up with the New England organization. I don't know. I mean, because here's the thing with the Raiders. You got to understand, they need a quarterback. They took a running back that wasn't very productive very early in the draft. So people are already labeling, Gentry a bust, which I think is a little bit unfair. But I think the other question is, if you're going to talk about the overall big picture, what do you do with Max Crosby? Max Crosby's probably your most bankable asset. He still has an incredible amount of value. So now the question becomes, can you actually win or rebuild this in time for Max Crosby still to be that player, or do you offload him and begin, just go, hey, we're going ground zero. This is going to be our Herschel Walker. Let's parlay this. I think that's the question. That there's many questions, especially when you're that bad of a football organization like the Raiders are.
Going to, before we go to the coaches who've already been fired, because we batted this around earlier in the show. If you're Baltimore, what do you do with John Harbaugh?
I think that's tied in with Lamar Jackson. It's obviously that relationship is not what we thought it was, given the story of Mike Preston. And you know this, guys, from being in the media, nothing is ever leaked just by accident.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And when Mike Preston wrote that story, he was a very respected, very reputable reporter, very respected voice in Baltimore, especially when it comes to that team. That was a message. And I just kept thinking to myself, was that a message of, hey, we're moving on from Lamar? Because it didn't paint Lamar in a great light, right, as a franchise quarterback. But here's the thing. I know this from the Ravens fans that I know. They've been very impatient, and the thought is that Harbaugh has wasted the prime of a two-time MVP quarterback. So I don't know. I mean, the organization has to realize if you move on from Lamar Jackson, you are moving on from one of your most iconic players, and two-time MVP quarterbacks do not just grow on trees. I mean, in theory, it's easy to trade people. The question is, are you actually going to upgrade? I don't know. I think his overall track record for Harbaugh has given him some time, but I just wonder, is it one or the other? Is this a choice between Lamar and Harbaugh?
Makes it difficult then, because like you said, if you get rid of Lamar, it's going to be almost impossible to replicate that production and that ability. But it just, we also know how much the owner, Biziotti, loves Harbaugh. So it's really just a difficult one. And, you know, Steve, if Pittsburgh had lost that game last night, we'd probably be having the same conversation about Tomlin this morning.
Yeah, and by the way, that's what I call the Pittsburgh purgatory. Do they beat Houston? Houston has a really good defense, and they're not your typical dome team. They're very physical and violent. And if you talk to the disgruntled Steeler fans, they will tell you the problem is we've made the playoffs for a full decade. We're always right around 500. We're never a dominant team, and he has not won a playoff game, or that organization has not won a playoff game since 2016. So, I don't know. I mean, is that good enough? I don't think so. When you're in an organization like the Steelers and a fan base that's used to having Lombardis hoisted, I think that's the worst thing in football or any sport, is to be just good enough not to be terrible, but not nearly good enough to be really elite. And so I think, yeah, look, Tomlin's been a pillar, but I did not see a team ready to make a deep postseason run last night.
All right, I'm going to throw a curveball at both of you. It just popped in my head. Because we've been talking about Max Crosby, two draft pick, two number ones. Where's he going? Who's rebuilding their defense? You just brought something up, and you guys talked about it. We talked about it off the air, I believe, and I've heard the storylines early this morning on the national show and on Sportsmanlike. In terms of the relationship with Harbaugh and Lamar, and let's say that they side with Harbaugh and Lamar has seen his last days. Lamar to Vegas for the number one overall pick?
And more.
Wow, that's interesting. I wonder if Lamar would want to do that. Let's say Lamar, part of himself is, I want out of here. Right? I'm just speculating. Mm. That's fine. You really want to go to that organization? Who's he throwing to? Who's blocking? I mean, I guess Brock Bowers, okay. That'd be his version of Mark Andrews. But I see a team so devoid of talent.
Yeah.
That it's great in theory.
And who's blocking for him?
To move and divorce. But again, are you actually going to a better situation?
No.
No.
But then, you know what, Steve, I was batting this around with a few of my friends this morning last night after the result. Like, all right, if Baltimore does decide to do it, and I don't think they're going to. I think if they're going to get rid of one or two of them, I do think it ends up being Harbaugh. But we've talked, like, we know Lamar wants to end up in Miami at some point, but they have the whole cap fiasco with Tua now. So it really opens up a whole bunch of boxes here. Baltimore is like, hey, we're going to move him with no realistic, like, and it's so odd to say this about a high-end quarterback, no realistic destinations that really make sense for Lamar at that point.
Yeah, and look, you have to play a certain style of ball. You know, he's not your classic traditional drop back pocket passer, although he's gotten better at it. And it's going to be a real philosophical shift for a lot of teams if they pick him up. So, again, sometimes you're better off staying where you're at and making it work. But this much is clear. Every year you go on, you're closer to the end of your career, and you're probably getting out of your physical prime. And when I look at that Ravens season, they blew the opening game against Buffalo. They blew that game. There's at least three or four games where I said, man, they were the better team. Even with the injuries, I still felt like, man, this should have been a 12-11-win team at least. It wasn't. So with that, sometimes you have to just blow it up, as Brian Billick once said. But blowing it up does not necessarily guarantee that you're going to be improved.
Steve, we appreciate you jumping on and catching us here toward the end. And we'll be back with you next week. Steve Kim, 3 Knockdown Rule. Oh, they're there?
Yeah.
Oh, he said bye. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to keep it here and take you to the end of the show here. So, I tell you what, did you realize that the WNBA players are back in action today? Little organization called Unrivaled.
Mm-hmm.
Started up today. There have already been a couple of games. The Mist behind Alicia Gray beat the Hive. They were led by Mo Billings. And I believe the Laces with Jackie Young beat the Vinyl. They were led by Brittany Sykes and Nas Hillman. So, anything you're looking for. I know you're a WNBA. That's how actually you and I met, talking some WNBA on with our friend Alex White a couple of years ago. Anything you're looking for from this? Any players that you think need to stand out this year from Unrivaled?
So actually, I'm going to take it a little bit differently because we saw Alex Basil today have his presser down there, and look. You're in a scenario here where the WNBA has all this
drama
with the CBA, right?
What's today, the 5th? So they're 4 days away from the deadline.
Yeah, so we're on the week of. Mm-hmm. And what, you would know better than me, probably be an extension again without a deal? Probably, but who knows at this point?
You got them all together in Miami. I don't know. Because you know, after the season, they're all in their own camps and they're resting. But now you get them together. They've been in training camp. They've been doing media. So I don't know.
And the interesting thing is, like Basil said today, like there'd be a potential. There's no constant dialogue, but open to a partnership in the future with the WNBA. And quite frankly, I think that would benefit everybody because. Look, the NBA, if we just look at the NBA side of things, that's a year-long deal at this point. Realistically speaking, it's a year-long thing because the season goes into late June. The summer league starts 2 weeks later. People love the NBA offseason. But I'm wouldn't you want as much basketball as humanly possible at this point if you're the WNBA? And I know it's like, look, I know some people say, oh, it's a three-on-three league. It's sacrilege. No, it's all the best players, for the most part, are playing in this league.
Well, a month away, we're a month away from Athletes Unlimited, too.
Yeah.
And there's a number of WNBA players, including Nalissa Smith from the Las Vegas Aces and Kia Stokes. And there's another ace that's going to be down there. But they're going to be in Nashville. So they're finding elsewhere to go. But the thing is they're all together. And so they're collaborating, and it's not a good look. The problem that I have is I don't think that they should – you know, they keep saying that nothing's a good deal and they're completely against it. The WNBA, the deals that are being made, the negotiating, they're budging toward, they have budged. It's the players that aren't budging. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out because we're 4 days away from the next deadline. Whether or not they extend again, I don't know if that's going to happen. Last year, Kathy Engelbert showed up at Unrivaled. She's obviously not there. The only face I've seen so far on social media is Becky Hammond's down there. She was supporting Jackie Young and checking out the talent. So, you know, I think the players, though, that are going to that need to sort of be in an audition and that are going to sort of make some waves are the players that they feel that they won't be protected when the expansion draft happens. Players like Kate Martin, who may not be protected up in Golden State. So
it'd be two moves in 2 years. Yeah.
Let's jump in the bag.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Put your hand in there, dude.
All right, we got a couple of minutes left. Real quick, let's look at the matchups for the wild card weekend. Mm-hmm. Rams, huge favorites on the road at the Panthers. Who do you like?
Rams win. I mean, this matchup less than a month ago was 7, and now it's 10?
It is what it is.
Boy. Carolina's been much better at home. Like, Rams win, but don't cover? That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Bears-Packers, they play each other for the third time in a month. Bears are at home. This number, I've seen one Packers pick, and I've seen one Bears.
I think Chicago is the better team at the moment. I think Green Bay is a mess with all those injuries. We don't know. We don't even know how healthy Love is. Heck, we don't even know how healthy Malik Willis is if Love can't go. So.
And Josh Jacobs has been banged up down the stretch.
Yeah.
Real quick, let's run it. Bills-Jaguars, who you got?
Jacksonville.
Me too. Niners-Eagles, who you got?
Philadelphia.
Like the Philadelphia Eagles, but I'm thinking of taking the points. Chargers-Pats?
Chargers upset.
I'm going with the Patriots. Texans-Steelers, Monday night.
Oh, even against all the voodoo, I'm going with Houston.
I'm going with Houston as well. When I hear Houston-Pittsburgh, all I can think of is Earl Campbell, baby. Those Houston Oilers back in the day. Man, great show. Once again, the Raiders are looking for a coach, third time in 3 years. We kick it off here this week. Cofield and Company, appreciate you joining in. Of course, thanks to our guests, Jesse Merrick, Steve Kim. Am I forgetting somebody?
Cofield himself.
Oh, and Cofield, that's right. Yeah, no, he was a guest. James, great job. Jeff, great job. Appreciate everybody. And stick with us throughout the week. I'm sure Adam Hill will be checking in, member of the company, the best insider from that Raiders facility as well. Again, for Jeff, for James, the Finley Toyota Studio, Willie Ramirez with Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas.